This next gentleman just penned the very recent book, Rocket Men, the epic story of the first men on the moon. And we have on the phone lines here author Craig Nelson, who just penned that book to coincide with the 40th anniversary of the first moonwalk. It's a pleasure to welcome onto the show Craig Nelson. Craig, welcome to the FDH Lounge, sir. Good evening.
Thank you, sir.
It's great to have you on. And this book that you had, it really illuminates so many different aspects of Apollo 11. It does, I think, a very good job of getting into some of the notions that people don't really know as much about. I'd like to start on something that people do know at least a little bit something about and get your take on this, because you address this early on in the book, because a lot of people trace the beginnings of the determination of the United States to put a man on the moon to the whole Sputnik project here. And I'd like you to talk about the extent to which Sputnik made the space program really almost kind of a bipartisan obsession. The Democrats and the Republicans were both behind it. It seemed to me to be something that nobody could really afford to stand up and question as far as price tag or priority or anything else like that.
Well, what a lot of people don't remember is that when Sputnik and then Laika the dog and then the first man in orbit, Gagarin, and the first woman in orbit and the satellite that photographed the far side of the moon, all these Soviet space triumphs happened one after the next. And what people don't remember is that a lot of these things terrified Americans at the time because they thought that the Soviets were going to use space as a new battleground, a new way to launch weapons to attack America. And they were right. The Soviets were planning on doing that. So the race to get to the moon was to show the Soviets that we had equivalent science and technology to theirs and could defend ourselves if they tried to attack us from space.
And that is that's something that's kind of intriguing, because that was, I think, one of the thoughts that people were having. Maybe people didn't fully understand the ramifications of it, and it was, which is understandable, because all you know is that, you know, the Red Menace is up there in space, and people are free to kind of let their imaginations run wild, especially in that era. You've got a man who is probably the foremost man associated with just driving this thing to the extent that it was, that being President Kennedy. What's very interesting in your book, and I think this is one of the big takeaways that people have from your book, Rocket Men, the epic story of the first men on the moon, the notion that President Kennedy in private may have had some misgivings about the price tag, or I guess did have some misgivings about the price tag, that never got out, at least in its own time.
Yeah, I think the reason we went to the moon was a combination of Kennedy and Johnson. You had Kennedy, who got the sort of average American excited about doing this in a way that Johnson could never do afterwards. And you had Johnson, who was able to get the Senate behind it by various ways that he knew of to do it. So he was able to get Congress working, and Kennedy was able to do it through the public. And it really took the two of them, and really Johnson was the engine of the whole thing. Kennedy had mixed feelings. Johnson thought going to the moon was exactly the kind of thing America should do.
And incidentally, and again, that right there probably had a lot to do with him getting his name on the project in Houston, correct? The fact that he was a big part of the muscle behind the project, that's probably a good reason that it's the Johnson Space Center, correct?
Well, you could say Johnson is the secret father of NASA. He was running the Senate when Eisenhower started NASA in 57, and Johnson was probably the key person to get it going in the first place. He was probably the key person to announce Kennedy's trip to the moon. He was really the person behind the scenes handling all of that. And then after Kennedy's death, he turned it in a priority. He was told again and again by his budget people how much money they would save if they didn't get to the moon in Kennedy's deadline, and he said he owed it to Kennedy to do it.
And it ended up happening again within a year of him relinquishing the presidency, so it almost happened on his watch. I mean, you know, within about 7 months or so, with that being the case. Something that I would like to get your opinion on, because I'm always interested in, and it's tough to answer hypotheticals fully, but I just would like to get your idea on this scenario here. What ifs kind of fascinate me, and I think it would be of some interest to the audience here. When you look at the Challenger tragedy of 1986, how traumatic it was to this country, just what a shock to the system it was, What if that had happened in 69? I mean, what if that something like that had befallen the space program at that very delicate moment in time? In your estimation, are we looking at anything that continues to evolve and prosper in the future out of that, or could that have just choked it right in the crib?
I'm sure it would have choked it right in the crib. By that time, we started knowing that the Soviets were not going to be able to go to the moon. So soon after, the space race would have probably been over anyway. So if there had been an Apollo 1 type incident with Apollo 11 or 10 or one of the other people going to the moon, and there had been another year and a half delay in moving things forward, by that time it probably would have stopped it.
One of the elements in the book that you addressed that's very interesting is the cross-pollination between astronauts and fighter pilots, and how I guess the notion of being in a capsule like that, it would be natural, I suppose. There's probably similar skill sets if we were to look at the population on that. But I was intrigued to see in your book the notion that these astronauts really tended to bristle at the notion that they were one-dimensional thrill junkies. A lot of them really seemed to take that kind of an inference personally, it seemed like.
Yeah, first of all, a lot of them didn't like each other. So being included as one group of people that were all very similar was enraging. So that's where it started. The second thing is that they were very cool characters. So this idea that they were daredevils and cowboys and all this kind of stuff and were trying to cheat death and were da-da-da, they weren't that way at all. However, it is true that if they hadn't been at NASA, they would have been flying in Vietnam. So they would have been doing something just as dangerous.
Well, yeah, that would have provided, obviously, its own set of dangers separate from that. Something that I'd like to get your thoughts on here, because the timing of your book, being 40 years since the moonwalk, from when Neil Armstrong, of course, being the first one, and then Buzz Aldrin going onto the moon in July 1969, one of the things that seemed to me, and maybe it was just the channels I was watching, in the 24 hours or so of the anniversary, there seemed to be what I thought was a disproportionate amount of attention being given to some of the conspiracy nuts out there. And I'm a big conspiracy guy in a lot of areas of life. I never have grasped the whole notion here of the whole Hollywood sound lot and this was all staged and everything like that. These deniers, it seemed to me, were getting a disproportionate amount of attention on some of the 24-hour cable news channels here. For somebody like you, who's gotten inside of this as much as you have, who's really grasped the full story of what happened here, what are your thoughts on these people out there with their whole kind of pseudo-intellectual thing of you don't really know what happened?
Well, the first thing was that NASA now has a satellite orbiting the moon called the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, taking high-definition pictures. And they've already returned 5 pictures of the Apollo landing sites. And within a day of NASA posting these pictures, one of the conspiracy people sent them to me with an email saying, look at the shadows! The shadows are all wrong! The shadows are all wrong! So I think, if you flew them to the moon, they would think you had faked it. And they are convinced that they know something, that the wool has been pulled over the rest of our eyes, and they know the truth. And they can't be talked out of it. And I think, actually, it's sad, because this is one of the great American triumphs of all time, and it wasn't just this story about astronauts and engineers. It took 400,000 Americans to go to the moon, and one of the stories I heard that was so incredible that I heard too late to get in the book is that the women who were sewing and gluing together the spacesuits that Armstrong and Aldrin wore on the moon had union jobs, and they would check out of their jobs at 5:15 and go around the back door and check in and work all night for free. And they worked so hard to make sure those suits were perfect and done on time that 2 of them had nervous breakdowns. They literally were these, 50 and 60-year-old women were working 18-hour days, 7 days a week to get this done. It was the greatest moment of their lives.
What do you think?
And so conspiracy people are taking this away from these women, and I think it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, you think those people are taking it personally? How about all the support people who, you know, the world may not know their names, but they were a part of this in some way? That's really got to enrage them to have these lunatics out there yelling about how this never happened. I mean, that
right.
seems unfair to those people as well as the famous names involved.
You know, a lot of people who aren't directly involved with NASA think that a spacecraft program is just engineers and scientists, but it's as much a manufacturing operation as a car factory. It involves welders and plumbers and engine and electricians and everybody. So it's all those people who were so proud of the work they did all those years ago that are also getting offended by this.
Well, I can well imagine that that's the case because, you know, it's maligning the accomplishments of, again, not just the famous, but anybody else involved in this. Craig, we love to give a chance to our guests on the show to plug anything that they've got going on here. Of course, the immediate project that you have, Rocket Men, the epic story of the first men on the moon. Additionally, previous books, The First Heroes, Thomas Paine. Anything else that you'd like to plug, sir, please take this opportunity.
Sure, Rocket Man is going on the New York Times bestseller list, tied at 15 on Sunday, so I'm in a good mood.
Well, excellent, excellent. We are we're getting this on our internet TV cameras here. I am holding it up here, and everybody can see the excellent picture. Nice job with the zoom in there, Ryan. Great job. The excellent picture of Neil Armstrong on the moon standing before the American flag. An excellent cover picture matching an excellent book. Rocket Men, this epic story of the first men on the moon. Craig Nelson, you are an excellent author, sir. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show tonight. We'd love to have you on again sometime, sir.
Anytime. Thank you, sir.